Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis. Well, that is Post covering finance and property news. Monday has come around again, and Edwin has come around again. Hi, Edwin. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing, mate, really well, Martin. I painted my roof blue last year, so I'm not expecting anything out of the ordinary. You have to what's a word for it? Just combust on the spot. I'm not.
So you're protected from the lasers.
That's it. That's it. Dusty told me that she's been speaking with Meteor, and your new slate is blue. Is that correct?
Well, it's actually a darker color than that, but it's a lot thicker actually. I don't hear the birds wandering around on the roof now, and it's much quieter and warmer as well. So, yeah, the roof mission is now succeeded. So that's good. So let the weather come. Anyway, talking about the economic weather and the property weather, it is mad out there. So the political shenanigans have started. Everybody's now offering you money here and there and everywhere. You know, we'll extend the NBN, we'll invest in that. Why don't we just build some more roads and even Dutton's on it as well. So wherever you look, the new year is started. I just wonder where all this money's going to come from. You know, I thought that the budget was pretty bust. So suddenly they're magicking money out of nowhere.
Well, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's same, but different. When you start really looking into the so-called, what would you call it? You can't even call them policies at this stage. It's just wishful thinking and the wish list that what they want to what they're going to promise, and or is it a bargaining chip or a bartering chip? It's really like an auction, right? They're really going to start. Bidding both sides of politics are going to start bidding for our votes. Look, I think the winner is going to be that whoever really takes a hard line on the current immigration policy. And I mean, not as I said, not same, but different. As you can see, even in that post, in that snapshot that I sent you, it's really all the one. Yeah, similar to what you wrote. I mean, the policies there that are sort of. Talk about with regards to the housing solution. It's really all what the Labor government promised and didn't maintain, or if they're saying that they're going to go against the current numbers that are coming in. But at the bottom of that post there, of that extract, you see that hold on, we're going to decrease the migrants coming in. But we're going to increase and assure that we get good construction workers coming in, those that want to participate in the construction industry. So, again, it's taking from the left, giving to the right, or is it taking from the right, giving to the left? It's really, really add-ons. I mean, apart from that, is you've also got the other. Commentary that's been talked about that Prue McSween put up there, patting Dutton on the back, I don't know why. Obviously, she doesn't understand what goes on and what happens when people are have access to albeit their own funds, but have it access to their own funds by the way of superannuation prematurely, or grants given by the federal government, or some sort of, as I call it, JV enterprise put out by the government. It just means one thing: just makes property that young families, new families, new first-time buyers want to get. It puts the price point further away. So, it's same, but different. And the wheel keeps on turning, mate. The wheel just the merry-go-round just keeps on going around and around.
Well, it's a really interesting observation as to the state of politics. I said a few weeks ago that I expected the next election to be very much based on housing, 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 housing. Right, and it's already proved to be there. But when you actually strip back and say, "So, what does it actually mean? You know, what are you actually going to do?" It's very, very unclear to me that really anything has changed. So a lot of the announceables that were on the Albo side were sort of hinted at earlier on. And on the Dutton side, well, it's pretty much an amalgamation of those things that he already had been talking about previously, but sort of put in a slightly shiny wrapper. So there isn't much more detail about anything. Now, okay, it's early days and, you know, we don't have to have an election until May time. But I do think that there's a really big issue that people have got to wake up to. And that is that the question, the big question, is whether in fact those rate cuts that everybody's hanging out for are likely to come. And, you know, there's an article like this one, which says the dip in the dollar spells trouble for the RBA rate cut. And it's interesting that the federal deficit's pretty big and a rate cut before the federal election, which must be held on or before May the 17th, would bolster the government's economic credentials. But it's not a done deal because the depreciation to a five-year low poses fresh inflation risk for the Reserve Bank. And that basically then begs the question as to whether it's likely or not. And of course, you know, everybody's now chatting about the, well, you know, the ASX are full, markets fret, the Aussie dollar drops. Could it put off cuts? Possibly could. Nobody quite knows. And the interesting question for me here, Edwin, is to what extent this is being driven by international factors. So we know that bond yields around the world are actually much stronger than they were previously because now markets are taking account of the Trump effect. And that's having a spillover effect in the UK. So UK gilts have gone way high. That's, you know, the treasuries in the UK. As a result of that, they're now fretting about what's happening in the UK. And so there's local and also international factors, but the international factors are pretty consistent, high US bond rates and therefore the very strong dollar. But the international factors may be consistent, but the local factors are actually still there as well. And I do think that in Australia and in the UK, local factors with regard to the economic performance are going to have a significant impact too. I'm not banking on a rate cut before the May election. And it's interesting that there was a Bank of America report that came out regarding the US that said that the Fed has perhaps finished its rate cut cycle and the next rate move in the US could be up. So if that is the trajectory of rates, boy, it could be interesting. So, you know, we've got all this political shadow boxing, but actually rate cuts may not be coming.
That's an interesting point that you raised, Matt, because it's going to put, obviously, a lot of doubt and concern in potential vendors and sellers' minds moving forward, and the question is going to be moving forward: are they going to sit it out? Are the numbers going to stay relatively low in comparison to the demand that's out there, and what's been shown over the last few weeks, from the start of the year, how they that appetite to buy in many of Sydney markets and for particular types of properties didn't go away. It didn't take a holiday. The reports across the board in Sydney from the people that we talked to, their reports are very strong when it comes to type of property, style of property, and how it's presented. And the inquiry is very, very strong, considering the end of the year, is when things cool down in terms of the activity. Now, what we have noticed with regards to activity, the selling agents are tired. The poor little bunnies that work too hard during the week, so they've taken a breather. So, therefore the properties that are open for inspection, are driving a large number of inquiry. Now, not all that inquiry is turning into sales, obviously, but it's just interesting to note how, in my opinion, over the last 2-3 years, it's really been from activity point of view, it's really been the slowest start to the year. For the industry, so it's going to be interesting. And the other thing is I haven't heard Tom Pannell say that he's been booked out or given a report on the AFR. Nobody's quoted him yet. Sweeney hasn't quoted him on the AFR to say that the world is crashing down and there's he's booked in for 10,000 auctions in January, February. So it's slow. It's going to be interesting how things move forward. So going back to your comment earlier on, and I think At the moment, as of today, as of now, I think that if it is an early election, the sellers are going to wait it out before they put their properties on the market. So we could see an opposite effect to what people were expecting. Once the sense that rate cuts aren't on the card early in the year, there it's going to be later on in the year, potentially later on in the year. Therefore, they're not going to achieve the they weren't going to achieve the right price. Now, with a change potential change of government, it could mean that a different dynamic. So the question is going to be, obviously, from our point of view, is looking at what the policies that are coming out, what they're promising, what they want to do, what they don't want to do. We're obviously going to be keeping a close eye on numbers, construction activity, and everything else in between, pre-election and post-election. But so far, from the from our inquiry with the law firms that deal with with migration, migration lawyers that specialize in migration, and also the agents that Dusty and Evan talked to, things haven't slowed down. Things haven't slowed down, and they don't feel that things are going to slow down with regards to immigration. As I've been saying for a long time now, for quite a number of months, it's changed the name of the visa, changed the number of the visa, and the rest of the world no different. You look at that snapshot again of the that Dutton put out in his in his whatever you want to call it, in his manifesto. on how to win the on how they're going to win, the Libs are going to win the election, and it really says it's very wordy, says a lot, but says nothing. And you, when you start reading between the lines, I mean, you read some of the points there, they contradict each other on that one page. I haven't read the whole the whole transcript, but it's quite an interesting points in relation to property. And obviously all the other policies are going to back up what, as you say, what the RBA are going to do, what's going to happen from an economic point of view. But as you know, Martin, you and I know that a lot of the people, as I've been saying, is that when they make property decisions, they're not basing it on logic or reason or they're really basing it on emotion and taking it's a roll of the dice. That's the unfortunate dynamics that in the most part we face here in Australia. And then you throw a few other things into the mix, and people FOMO on fear of missing out. And numbers change a bit, going up and a bit going down, and it influences and impacts the markets for a month or two before things change. It's really, it's going to be interesting for the next few months. Needless to say, but I personally, because of how I've seen from the selling side and. Of real estate, and also acting as a buyer's agent for the last 6, 7 years, it's the a rate rise or a rate cut is only going to fuel emotion, and I could say for the same reason, for the same things that we've been talking about, with even if there was to be left field the rate rise, which we know there won't be before the election. The people that are looking at buying, they're not moved by it. They're really not moved by it, because it's not your normal pool of buyers. And this is where people are getting it totally wrong as to who's buying and what they're buying.
Yeah, well, I think the point there is that the mix of people coming into the country is still quite interesting, and quite a few people who are coming into the country have capacity to buy and a willingness to buy even now. So there is a level of uncertainty. We have got other people, of course, who are in Australia trying to buy and finding it very difficult to. And I don't know whether you saw, there was an article that came out the other day that was making some comparisons between prices and incomes. And it was this is the slide here, the Great Australian Dream, now a $234,960 nightmare. So they're making some comparisons between income for an individual and the price of an average property in Sydney, and said it's impossible. The dream is now a nightmare for many people. And I actually made a show yesterday, Edwin, called The Great Australian Nightmare, where I actually connected that chart with some of my mortgage stress analysis. And in fact, that show's done extremely well. I'd also make the point that the individual story of people varies. So there are still people with capacity to spend if they want to, or to sell if they need to, but they sit there because there's uncertainty. And I think the uncertainty at the moment is the big factor. I see that in my survey. So quite a few people who are not in immediate financial pressure are saying, well, I'll just sit it out. I'll just wait and see what happens. You know, I don't have a need to do something immediately. I'm just going to wait and see what happens. Fascinating, though, of course, that the media are still, call it media in inverted commas. You know, the advertorials on some of the newspapers, like this one for Winners and Losers in Home Value Game, are still spruiking the rises or the falls, and depends where you look, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And did you see this article? There was one that said why housing economists got it wrong in Perth and Melbourne. So Perth went up much more than expected, and Melbourne fell more significantly than expected. Now, I have to tell you that some of my modelling was more accurate, I think, than that, because I was talking about the difference between Melbourne and Perth. We actually, a year ago, made the point that Perth was in a different state to Melbourne, and we felt Melbourne was in a different state to Sydney. And I don't know whether you saw this, but this was fascinating. The Victorian household now falls behind Tasmania in terms of household income. So actually now Tasmanians are doing better than Victorians. So, you know, a little local trouble there in Victoria, which is one of the reasons why the Victorian market is still pretty weak. So I think my takeouts are these. Firstly, there are a lot of people just sitting on the sidelines and just going to see, well, let's see what happens over the next few months with the election and rates, et cetera, et cetera. And, we'll let that go for a bit. There are other people saying, well, there may be an opportunity, because if there are prices down a little bit, then maybe it's an opportunity to buy. There are some people still willing to buy. But at the moment, if you look at the auction stats, not a huge number coming up, so people are taking it a bit slow, I think, at the moment. Although your little comments here were quite interesting. This is actually for the Sydney market in particular, which basically makes the point that you made a little while ago, that there's still quite a lot of activity. Still, people are actually looking around in some areas of Sydney. And in fact, to this next one, 25 to 30 groups, others were quiet. So it's a bit mixed. So I think my takeout from all of this is people are just going to chill out a little bit until things get a little bit clearer. And that might put a bit of dampener on some markets, but in other markets, there's still quite strong appetite.
Yeah, look, I think the fear for a lot of, obviously the fear for a lot of buyers is going to be whether or not the vendors are going to take a breather, which is what I'm sort of leaning more towards. And that is because, as I said earlier on, they'll wait it out until post the election to perhaps get a better, a better result. And look, at the end of the day, as I keep on saying, is the Sydney region is a very small market in comparison. And we've got really, really small numbers. To some, 16,000 on market may appear to be a big number, but it's not. Not when you've got the population growth that we've had. Before all this, before the pandemic and everything else, before the lockdowns and literally before 2019, 2017, 18, the numbers were above 27,000 in terms of property market. And look at where we are now. And we've grown in leaps and bounds over the last couple of years. So this is where, and construction obviously was more predominant, was more was happening all over Sydney, and things were relatively affordable to build, to renovate. So there was a lot of properties were transacting. Now we've got the opposite, and we've got a growth in population, and people are just tired. As you said, there are a lot of people on the sidelines. That's what we see. So going back to that post from the auction of Saturday, Martin, is you see I've outlined there we had seven auctions. We knew it was a slow start to the year. We've been talking about it. But in terms of open for inspections, and this is from this is pulled out of the Sydney region for Domain. 3,797 homes were open for inspection in across New South Wales last week. Last week, which is a very low, very low number. That so I did that snapshot on Saturday morning. Yeah, that screenshot there that I posted. So that's very low numbers. Hence, I guess in areas where there's a lot of appetite, there's a lot of demand. Well, you're going to get those sort of numbers, and you're going to get those sort of results as we've been saying all along. And but again, moving forward, you may say, well, what of the Australian dollar as well? And this is for me, it's an interesting post, and also it's the comments that followed on that on this post, and what you brought up earlier on as well with your commentary there with regards to the economy. And I mean, it's even if this is what Krashman writes, even if the RBA gives a rate cut February 2025, Australia is going to experience imported inflation with the Australian dollar exchange rate under 62 cents. So I guess from that point of view, yeah, if you it's going to put a lot of pressure, but the question is that pressure going to translate into listings? Is that pressure going to translate, and I'm talking purely the Sydney market, is it going to translate into property listings across the Sydney markets, or are people once again just gonna hold back because of the exorbitant costs and the deterrent that's in many people's minds to to downsize and to change from a freestanding home into something more manageable because of the downsizing, their empty nesters, whatever you want to call them. They need smaller areas to look after, and but they can't because and they won't because of the exorbitant costs, and to stay local in their local areas, it's creating a further emotional pressure because it's pulling people away from the area where they grew up, they know, they've lived for the last 65, 70 years, and they may have owned that home for the last 30, 40 years as well. So these are all the pressures. So this is why a lot of these. Yes, the very strong economic factors that they give us an indication of how we're tracking economically. There's all this inflationary areas. You've got immigration to bolster the government numbers and all this and all that. But at the end of the day, people that are buying and people that are selling, people that want to transact, these things almost in my mind. Become secondary information to the need, the need, the want, the desire, and the desperation to just have a roof over the head, which changes the mix in many ways and in many markets.
Yes, well, the desire for somewhere secure to live is clearly inbuilt, and it's totally appropriate. It's just that many people are unable to achieve that dream for all sorts of reasons. Though I have to tell you, Edwin, I think the interesting observation that I look at is that we've got so many conflicting signals about what's really going on. And if you want an example of that, this was actually what happened with regard to the retail sales. So this is a headline saying, "Retail sales miss Lee's support to likely rate cuts." And that was because of a particular way of looking at the retail data, which suggested it might be not as strong as it was. Now, there are other people saying, no, actually, the retail sales numbers were pretty strong. And therefore, it may actually dampen the likelihood of a rate cut. So I actually made a post called Schrödinger's Household Spending, right? Because, you know, the old Schrödinger's cat in a box. with an isotope, and you don't know whether the cat's dead or alive because it could be in one and two states. Well, that's what a bit like the spending was, right? You could make two stories of this. You could argue that retail spending is really strong, and therefore that might actually kick rate cuts out. Or you could argue that retail was pretty weak, and that might enhance the prospect of a rate cut. The truth is, the data was conflicting and inconsistent, and therefore it didn't really tell us very much at all. Now, I would argue that that's a really important observation, not just about the retail spending, but a lot of the other data that's around at the moment. You can almost make the data say anything you want it to say because there are so many conflicting signals, and every time you see one piece of data going one way, another piece of data might be going another way. So exchange rates would suggest that rate cuts are less likely because inflation is going to be imported. Oil, of course, for example, is going to be more expensive in US dollars. On the other hand, the other side of that is that the tax take from Australian government perspective will include a lot of US dollar denominated tax. And so if you think like some of the international trade that Australia is involved in, that's in US dollars, which means that the tax take back into Australia could be quite a bit bigger than it was actually thought to be the case. And what that basically means is that, as the article said, there's a chance for surpluses as taxes boom, and taxes boom partly because of the exchange rate. So I don't know. You can almost make any story you like, and you might be right, you might be wrong. My point is simply that the signals are conflicting at the moment, so that points to a level of uncertainty, and I think that level of uncertainty is likely to continue for some time. I do make this point, though, that the low Aussie dollar is going to have real consequences. I made a show on this the other day. And I do think, honestly, I do think that it's going to have a significant impact on the RBA. The RBA rate cuts are probably further out than many people think. And I do notice that there are some regulars who are continually spruiking rate cuts to try and get people to come back into the property market. It's just that the rate cuts don't seem to be coming, and yet they still keep spruiking. It's just around the corner, just around the corner, just around the corner. And it's really fascinating when you talk to people, real people on the ground through my one-to-ones. They are much more acutely aware of some of these issues than many would have expected, and are much more skeptical of what's going on than what's being written in the newspapers and being spoken about on some of the other channels as well. So to my mind, there are a lot of much more genuine, real people who are much more acutely aware of the real factors. And because of that, you'll sit back and just wait and see what happens. Now, that said, of course, there is a question of, do you feel lucky, Edwin? I mean, do you feel lucky? Is there a chance? What about this? A little roll of the dice then. Is this a way out of the problem?
Well, again, this is going to be one of those decisions that many people are potentially going to make based on emotion rather than on common sense. It's rather interesting. We've been speaking about this development for over the last couple of years, and we watched the sinkholes appear, and you sort of have to wonder where, what. First of all, my question has always been, what are they building on top of? And we all know that, and it's that they're building on top of old mine shafts and waterways that that could go, every which way. When you're putting you're putting all these monstrosities on top of that, on top of those areas, those old coal mines, you're going to expect trouble. But it's rather interesting. I couldn't read the whole article because there's a paywall on it, so I just sort of try to get as much info as I can, and I call a couple of people that are to try and get a little bit more background on what was being said. But it's interesting that in this instance, the bank, the receiver, has given the people that have put deposits on, off the plan deposits for these apartments, they're given an opportunity to take the deposits back plus interest. That to me was rather interesting. So there's a bit of money back. There's a bit of money being, held there. But then again, it could simply just be that the real estate agents have done the right thing. And that is they've didn't pass on the deposits to the release the deposits to the vendors, as we've seen in, historically in some of the Sydney developments and those dodgy developers, and they've kept them in trust accounts, and also they've because it's been a long wait. Typically if it's longer than 6 months, you basically put that deposit into an interest-bearing account for the purchases. So they can take that and walk, or the other option is perhaps stay on and see who takes over the project. You'd be you I don't know you'd First of all, I think any builder or any developer that takes on this project, for all the various reasons that we've seen in the past, you got to have big balls. You got to have big cojones. So, or perhaps perhaps High-Rise Harry, he's only a short bloke, but he's got big balls, and maybe he's taken over the project. There aren't many that would take it on, and if they did take it on, they'd take it at a cents in the dollar, in my opinion, because of the liability moving forward. So it's going to it's obviously an interesting scenario, but the takeaways from that is the what's happening from with the with construction around the flawed construction around Newcastle. It's only going to get worse, in my opinion, and there's going to be a lot more issues happening in Newcastle. And one of my I was putting together my the next few predictions for 2025, and Newcastle was part of it. And then one of my contacts sent me this, and it was just so timely. So, because I had a prediction about Newcastle, which I'll share later on. That was the first thing. And the second takeaway from this, Martin, is the simple fact that we really can't build. We really can't build high rise. Or there's, as I've been saying for a long time, there's only a handful. Of companies that can build high rise, and you'd really trust if you were to buying into one of their developments, to have the confidence that you can make claims against the building and against the owner's corporation or the developer, in 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the track, and also obviously, hand in glove with that is. There's not a lot of strata companies that are also transparent, that would take on the building and that would manage the buildings properly. And this is where a lot of the issues also arises, because they've got bad strata management companies. From what George tells me, there aren't too many good ones over in Newcastle. So there's your there's another reason why maybe they should take the money and bail.
Yeah, well, it's just, are you feeling lucky? I mean, the gambles that people are taking with regard to buying off the plan high rise continue, to my mind, to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Which sort of begs the question, should you actually adjust the forecasts of the number of units that are going to be delivered? Because effectively they're way off where they want them to be. And in fact, there was a little letter in the same Newcastle Herald was talking about this thing, saying the number of dwellings forecast should be slashed. We are finding it in Australia very difficult to build quality high rise, and it's got worse and worse and worse. Now, we've discussed this on many occasions, the privatization of the, the checks and balances, the fact that people are building down to a price, the fact that some of the land that they were building on was pretty dodgy to start with, and I think that's what's happening up in the Newcastle example here. But also the idea of selling off the plan to offshore investors who maybe won't do much in the way of checks and balances and due diligence and things like that. But it really does highlight the really fundamental question is, can you really solve the housing crisis or emergency? I prefer emergency, because emergency suggests you can do something about it, whereas crisis, they'll say, oh, it's not my problem, it's somebody else's problem, right? So it's the emergency, housing emergency. But can you solve the housing emergency just by simply throwing up more cheap high rise? To my mind, you're making a bigger problem rather than solving it.
Yeah, and this is why the local councils in many areas are fighting it, and no different to Melbourne, no different to many parts of Sydney, and here you have Newcastle Council just don't want the because they know the risk. They know the councillors, love them or hate them, the red tape, to one side of that coin is there for a reason. The controls are there for a reason. Apart from the fact that you've also got to consider all the other infrastructure, emergency services, water, electricity, pressures on that, on the electrical grid, sewerage. And all those things that many people don't think about. Look at the fires and the issues that are happening over in California and Palisade, those parts of the world where you've got 40, 50, 60 plus million-dollar homes just literally turned to ash. A lot of it has to do with obviously infrastructure, not keeping up with infrastructure needs and requirements. And the same goes for many parts of New South Wales, Newcastle not being any different, and more to the point, because as I said before, and as I've said for many years, and knowing a bit, having a bit of background with Newcastle and a couple of development sites that I was involved with up there, decades ago, it really is an eye-opener as to how people, have been allowed to build, what they're building, what's there, what type of structures are there, and the many issues moving forward post-construction that the occupants, from a tenant's point of view, and also from a owner's corporation point of view, are facing the many costs that arise from it. But Sydney's no different, Martin. And if you start looking at land subdivisions, I mean, we can push for land to be subdivided. I mean, I've known of two developers that are sitting on 60, 70, 80,000 blocks, but they can only release them a small amount at a time because there's restrictions and constraints again around emergency services being able to access it. Look, there are quite a number of issues with what a lot of people don't understand, and that's going on with Badgerys Creek. I can tell you now, I've got an insider there in Badgerys Creek, and one of my predictions there is that there'll be a massive fire there around the airport that they won't contain. As a matter of fact, an insider there, senior insider in the, in that that's looking at that certain part of the construction there and the development there, is proverbially shit scared that they've pushed the boundaries with regards to the building so close to, in some parts, Bell 40 and FZ that they shouldn't be. They feel that they won't be able to contain the fires. And what about when the planes dump the fuel? But you think they're going to be what you think they're going to be dumping it onto? People don't understand, and this is what people that are there are telling me, Martin. So. As I said, one of my predictions moving forward for 2025 is may not happen in 2025. Might have to hold that one back to 2026, depending on when the airport opens up. But it's not really a prediction. It's what they're telling me that has a very high chance of happening. But yet the push to build and push those boundaries by the governments. Of all persuasions, and because of what's happening and the growth that they're experiencing, and again, it all comes back to follow the money. Who's going to benefit? Who's going to gain? But our followers and our viewers, we're all more concerned as to who pays who forks out for the bill at the end of the day, and it's us, the taxpayers.
Yeah, and if you want another example of that, Edwin, this is a absolutely disgusting situation. So, you know, Australia will need gas imports despite a 2025 surplus, the ACCC warns. So fascinating analysis here. This is from the Australian Institute. 82% of gas is used for exports. We actually use 7.3% of the gas produced to convert the LNG into, to convert the LNG. So, you know, you have to sort of use the power of gas to be able to convert the the gas into LNG that you can export it. And if you look at this breakdown, 6.4% manufacturing, 6.2% gas power plants, 2.6% residential and 2.7% other. So we have massive amounts of gas, but because of bad policy over many, many years, we're now in the situation where you're going to be looking to import gas to meet demand from Victoria and New South Wales, despite the fact that we are producing loads of the stuff. So this is another fascinating example of major policy failure from the point of governments, and the fact that large LNG producers have Australia over a barrel, because effectively we are being charged at the international price. And of course, as the demand for LNG goes up, as it is at the moment because of the cold pressures in the Northern Hemisphere, that's putting the cost of electricity up to the point where many businesses are going out of business in Australia. So this is another classic example of major policy failure. And wherever you look, you know, these are things that should be being spoken about, to my mind, when it comes to the next election cycle, you know. But there's no discussion of some of these really big structural issues. We're actually just going around the houses, as we said at the top of the show. So for my mind, this is another example of government failure. And I'm afraid that there is structural failure that we've seen, whether you look at LNG, whether you look at housing. I could go through a whole long list of other things. The healthcare sector, for example, another example where effectively bad policy over many years is just coming home to roost now. And it's like, you know, if you'd run the tape back 20 to 30 years and made different decisions then, you could actually have been in quite a different place to where you are now. So that's the first point. The second point then is, but don't just keep doing the same stuff again, assuming a different outcome, because you won't get a different outcome, right? If you build more high-rise, poorly certified, poorly constructed high-rise, you're going to get more people with property that's going to have more defects over the next decade or two, which is going to be a huge impost on those individuals and, of course, on society in general. If you continue the LNG policies the same way that you are at the moment, you're going to have ever higher energy prices, and you're going to be ridiculously re-importing LNG from overseas to be able to stock up gas in the southern states. And that's going to put higher pressures on people and businesses, and that's going to keep the cost of living higher than ever. So the point I want to make, migration, another one, right? If you actually dial back migration to a more sensible level, you could take some of the pressure off the property sector. But no, we need to import more construction workers. It's like, you can't make this stuff up. But, you know, there are policies that could be done, but they won't be done because they are departing too far from the same old, which both sides of government are still preaching.
Yeah, and it goes back to a lot of, you know, a couple of the points there that you raised. It goes back to how important it is to understand those, not only a certain part or certain number of government policies that have an impact on the economy, like you're saying with energy. We're paying exorbitant. We export the raw material. We get it back in refined, and then we're paying four or five times more than what we should be really paying, and therefore we can't, we can't manufacture, we can't produce anything. So if we can't produce, we're left in our mining sector, and agriculture is going to be taking a beating as China's economy shrinks, and we're going to know more, towards the end of 2025 and more so in 2026, as the WeChat chatters have told us. And it's apparent anyway. So, it means that what the only other way to fool the people in trying to keep inflation down is by immigration and immigration and education, and that puts again that's the vicious circle that puts strain on local needs for tenancies and local needs for housing, for permanent housing. So yeah, that's that vicious cycle that they don't want to. They don't want to upset, some people. They don't want to upset because it really has a huge effect on the other side. But realistically, at the end of the day, what are we doing? The other side of that also is in order to maintain all these new policies, to maintain all these new, announceables, you've got to create committees, and you've got to create think tanks, and you've got to create all these other groups, and they get paid exorbitant amounts of money. Correct me if I'm wrong, you're probably more up to speed with the numbers, but out of the 275,000 so-called new jobs that have been created over the last couple of years under the Labor government, 137,000 of them have been public servants in that industry because of what? You need think tanks. You need people to new people to look after the new groups that have got to look after the pet projects that different ministers run with and want to sort of and become their little the little pet project at the cost and at the at the behest of, in many parts, the behest of the minorities, and the majority pay for it. So, yeah, this is the vicious circle that we're confronted with. But then, of course, obviously, that has an impact on what the RBA does, what it doesn't do, and if people. If that one of those reports that you put out, if they're talking about, because of the low spending, therefore, it may make the RBA drop interest rates. I mean, but they don't want to really tackle the reason why aren't people spending, because they can't afford to have three square meals these days. They've got, most household, a lot of households that are under economic pressure, are getting through with one, and it's shameful. It's a shameful state of affairs that we're in, but this is it. So, with all the different points, with all the different indicators that we see, with all the different with all the noise that is around, obviously we try to dissect it and sort of try to mesh some of it together to help our followers and our viewers. This is why it's more important to look at what's going to happen moving forward with the numbers, because the numbers and the activity around the dynamics of marketing campaigns and also the amount of properties on the market, and what agents are saying is going to be very, very, very important, which is something that we like to bring to our followers and our viewers, because as I said, a lot of these people are going to be making decisions based on what they hear as well and what real estate agents tell them and what's front of mind in the legacy media. What's been pushed for that weekend or that week or that fortnight? What's been pushed by the legacy media in order to persuade people to either buy or sell? The other thing there, Martin, is I've been thinking a lot over the last 3 weeks, is with this huge push for construction, right? With this huge push that Dutton, Alba, whatever, wanting to, and even the state premiers wanting to, kick off high rise. I've been, thinking more and more as to who are going to be the bunnies that are going to be buying these, and I tend to think that, in many, in the majority, the bunnies that are going to be buying these off the plan apartments in order to stimulate construction, because you've got to have a certain amount of pre-sales. You've got to have pre-sales, and the banks have got to see the legitimacy of the pre-sales in order to fund the developers and builders to build these projects. Without it, you can whistle Dixie, you're not going to get a cent from the bank. No bank is going to back you. And there aren't that many cashed up developers, floating around with $150, $200 million in the back pocket. So you're going to need all these pre-sales. Who are going to be the bunnies? I mean, the bunnies back in 2012, when they changed the buying policies, around the FIRB policies, where before then we used to see a lot of small, medium-sized development being built for the local for the locals to absorb and the locals to living. And then post 2012, when the changes came about to who can buy, who was allowed to buy, and then you could sell entire apartment blocks to Chinese investors. I mean, the landscape changed overnight. Areas where you wouldn't build more than a 35, 37, 42 a block of units, all of a sudden you saw monstrosities of 120, 150 on the same block of land, and they just dug a bit deeper, and then all sorts of troubles happened moving forward. And we haven't learned, and they want to reignite 2014, 2015 again, because the state governments and the both all sides of politics were that's when they got hooked on the LSD of stamp duty, and they haven't been able to kick that habit, and now you need another group of bunnies, and sadly I believe it's going to be the silent tigers, the not so smart silent tigers that are going to be buying off the plant because of the speculative gains that they've had over the last 2, 3 years from the developments that have happened over in India, and the big boost to construction and development there in India, and the huge amounts of money that they've made, and they're going to speculate in our market, and I think they're going to be the bunnies, and therefore you've got to keep that gateway open for that investment to come in. Hence the reason why I don't believe what Dutton says, what Albo says, what anybody says with regards to lowering the number of migrants or the classification of migrants. I'm more concerned for the Aussies that want to get into the property arena and want to get into the property market, as more concerned as to who's coming over. From all sides of things. If the Australian dollar continues to tank, guess what? It become a house on Point Piper, a house at Double Bay, a house at Vaucluse is going to be cheap as chips, because of the not so much for the local pricing, but for somebody that that's got two Aussie dollars to the one US, or whatever other currency they've changed, because our currency has just gone to confetti.
Yeah, I think that's a very important factor. And with the exchange rate where it is, and it's going to stay low for quite some time, clearly, that's making our property cheaper from an international perspective. And there are people looking at different markets around the world and thinking that maybe Australia is a good place to buy, and speculation, et cetera, et cetera. So, another point I'd make in all this is, we've mentioned it before, but just to re-emphasize it again, there are large corporations in the property sector and in the LNG sector and in the finance sector, et cetera, the mining sector, who are actually doing really, really well out of all this, thanks to government support directly and indirectly. And of course, they also have heavy lobbying power and heavy influence with regard to policy. And sometimes I think that if you wanted to reset, the first thing you would do would be to stop all of the government support for all of those large corporations that exist at the moment and reset that. If you did that, then the tax take from the corporate sector would rise significantly, and that could actually take some of the pressure off ordinary Australians. And it will also change the game in terms of the relative benefits of some of the stuff that's being done at the moment, which is to the benefit of those corporations, particularly international corporations like some of those big LNG players, rather than local businesses. So, to my mind, again, it comes back to there are levers that could be pulled, but neither side of politics are going to pull those levers, because they're actually too far from the what's been happening the last 20 to 30 years, and nobody wants to rock the boat. Let's just briefly touch on the numbers before we close out. And it's quite interesting, if you look at the Sydney numbers, On the 6th, this is looking at properties for sale, 16,233. Jump forward to the 13th, 16,446. So a small rise, although interestingly, Edwin, the numbers are significantly lower than they were, if you look back a few weeks. So it's interesting just to sort of see how things are going to rise. But actually, if you then make a comparison between Melbourne, so on the 6th, they were 26,901, whereas a week later, 26,510. So in fact, in Melbourne, we've gone the other way. What on earth is going on?
It's early days, Martin. It really is. It's really early days. As I said, a lot of the officers that I speak with, the licensees and the salespeople that I speak with, they're still on holidays. Strangely enough, they're still on holidays. I would say the people that I know, most of them come back only today, and about 20, 30% won't be back till Wednesday, Thursday. So hence the reason why it's they're very tired. Then again, as I said before, and I said before, in a lot of the areas as well where the WeChat chatterers are very active, they haven't been that active, and a lot of the agents know that they won't be that active for the first for January for and perhaps into the first week of February. Well, not only because at the end of the month we've got the Australia Day long weekend, and then the school break is over and all that. But outside of that, you've also got the Lunar New Year, the Year of the Snake, is upon us on the 29th. So the WeChat chatterers are taking a breather, and that was one of the things that we said in an earlier show this year was, if you want things done, get it done early, because some of the businesses, that the WeChat. A lot of the businesses of the WeChat chatterers are involved with is around building materials, building and construction, and they're taking an extended holiday as well. So that's another reason why quite a number of agents and agencies haven't come back as well, because they feel that their audience is not really on deck. So we'll wait and see. Again, it's still early days, but it is interesting. So it's the first time we've seen that, pulling back that hut from one week to the next. It'll be interesting to see moving forward. Are the Melburnians, or the people that have got that, trying to get out of is that pain of not having it tenanted, not being able to sell, because the properties being on the market and not being able to sell and not accepting the drop in the prices that they're being offered, are they putting them back onto the rental ledger? Time will tell.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we'll watch as, of course, we report each week on the numbers. Just looking at Brisbane briefly, on the 6th, 3,180, jump forward a week, 3,403. So a bit of a rise there, but again, still relatively quiet. And if you look at the overall auctions, we snapshot a little bit of this, but this is on the 11th of January, 18th of January. You can see there how things are just moving slightly forward. But again, it's very, very quiet. And I think really until we actually start seeing some momentum, probably into February, we won't get a read as to how things are absolutely developing. On the rental side, on looking at Sydney on the 6th, 14,117, 14,822 a week later on the 13th, and in the Melbourne market on the 6th of January, 12,638 compared to 13,701. So there are actually more rental properties coming on, and that might have an impact on the rents growth. The latest data suggested perhaps that the rental growth was easing, although I'm a bit skeptical of those numbers. Again, it varies depending on where you look. So I think you're right, Edwin. It's early days yet. The new year really has only just started to kick off. A lot of people are still away, and agents are taking a bit of a holiday, et cetera, et cetera. So ask us again in 2 or 3 weeks, and we'll have a better read as to what's going on. But before we close off, you have been evolving your predictions for 2025, and you've got a few more to share.
As I said, I usually like to have about anywhere between 10 and 15 predictions at the beginning of the year to see how we go. Try to bring some insights, some cheeky ones, and depending how I feel and the mood that I'm in. So rather than having a tip, or maybe it's a tip, the predictions could be tips, Martin. But don't, it's not financial advice, and I'm not telling you to go put it all on black or red on the casino. Prediction number eight was Newcastle. I feel it's going to be rocked with a similar earthquake as we had in 1989. And I guess that's also because of the conversation that we're having with some of the people that that know a little bit more about Newcastle than many, and what they're worried about. So this is why I put these ideas together. So you never know. So it could be, hopefully not. And I don't. Hopefully the devastation. It's just a thought because of what I hear, what I feel, what I see, what I what's happening across the world, and we're not immune to it. And also the we're definitely going to have the bidding war that's going to commence between the Libs and the Labs, which has already commenced, and sort of some might say, "Oh, yeah, you're only saying this because you know that the election's well and truly on the boil." I should have put this out on Friday, but I didn't. Between the Libs and the Labs, and it's going to be interesting to see which party dishes out. They're going to be fighting for, as I said, fighting for our vote. But the grants are going to start coming, thick and thin, and as we said earlier on in the show, which is going to then make people change their minds about buying and selling as well. So it's but not understanding the fact that these are just promises, announceables, that in most cases they're not really kept, and they're not really thought through. And in the majority, just adds more pressure, more weight to the value of the property for and the sacrificial lambs are always the first time buyers. And number 10, Sydney, from the what I've been just watching and listening to and watching around the world, I'm a believer that Sydney's going to have a be hit with devastating floods and in the west. I think that's, to me, that's always been on the cards, and I feel that we're getting a lot closer to that because of the pressure that's put on the land with some of the areas that have been subdivided, and because not so much because of the rainfall changes, but more so because of how the waterways and the natural easements have been diverted or blocked or rediverted or not really managed properly, is my thoughts on that. And just going through some of these subdivisions, some of these areas, it's just like I said with regards to Badgers Creek and the fear from our insiders that have with regards to major bushfires around there, because of the fact that they're not taking into account properly in the fudging reports as they go. And I also feel that there'll be bushfires in the northern region of Sydney, again because of the people that I talk to and what's happening and with lack of management, around the Lane Cove, corridor and the Lane Cove River corridor, those areas where people are just are ropeable with the stuff that's being allowed. The same could be said for a number of parts of Sydney with regards to bushfires and management, but there are a lot of chatter. There's a lot of chatter around the northern region, and the northern beaches as well, with regards to bad management, and look at what we're seeing evolving in California. Most of it's infrastructure issues, but as well as bad management of the flora and the fauna.
Yeah, it's interesting because the reports that I'm reading suggest that there's been a lot of development into the bush in and around LA, and therefore, there's much higher density, much further intruded into the brush that's there. And as you say, they haven't invested in infrastructure. It sort of sounds horribly familiar, unfortunately, doesn't it? So if you get a turn in the weather, the risks are much higher. And I suspect that the risks are higher in Australia. Of course, I recall the big fires from a few years ago in Australia. We were down in Thurl, actually sent Jill to New Zealand for 2 months because of the smoke in the in the atmosphere for such long, she had difficulty breathing. But it just highlights the fact that there are consequences of bad planning. There are consequences of bad investment in infrastructure, and some of those the consequences sometimes when they come home to roost, come home to roost in a way which is really, really scary. And unfortunately, so often the politicians and those in decision positions prefer just to go on with the same old until they're forced by circumstances to do something different rather than actually being more proactive. And for me, that's the real lesson from today's conversation, Edwin, that things can continue to grind along, but those in charge prefer to look the other way and not talk about the real issues until it's too late. And I suspect we're going to see some more of that in the next few months and years. So not a very positive way to start the year, but I think a realistic way to start the year.
Well, I think positivity starts with realism, and leads into preparedness to have a better outcome. So then you stay, it's like you said, it's facts, points, indicators to help navigate through all the darkness, the smoke and the mirrors that are just before anybody wants to go in front of anybody wants to navigate through that through the pathway. And as I said all along, also it's not only with the with property with buying property, but also comes back to with the area, with the aspect of or the arena of the rentals as well, because they're big decisions that families and young people, people in general have to make, the elderly, all these things. So yeah, I think I think it's somewhat positive, or call it constructive is the better word. Hopefully people, I know that our followers and our viewers follow the advice or the general conversations that we have, and they pick the points, and they understand better than the average Joe out there that's just trying to lean on selling agents to give them decisions as to whether or not they should buy a property, or developers, to tell them, and builders to tell them, what they're building here is a great project, and they're gonna have a great windfall moving forward. That's it. So there's your positive outcome.
Yeah, spot on. Well, I think the point is you can take more control, and if you ask the right questions, then you can perhaps get a better outcome. Edwin, thank you very much. As always, great to catch up with you. We'll do it all again next week, and there'll be plenty to chat about then. And have a good meantime. See you later.
All the best, man. Take care.
Bye.